you ever wanted to know the secrets to successfully juggling the demands of building a business and marriage and raising a family? If so, then this podcast is for you. Hi, I'm Monica Tanner, a wife, mama to four kids, and a relationship and intimacy expert. My mission is to ensure that passionate entrepreneurs like you never have to choose between your dedication to your family and your passion for your message. Having it all is absolutely possible. Welcome to On the Brighter Side, Marriage for Entrepreneurs. Let's dive in. Hello and welcome back to On the Brighter Side, Marriage for Entrepreneurs. I am so excited for my guest today. She is Dr. Jolie Hamilton. She's a research psychologist, best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and ASEX certified sex educator. She's spent the past two decades studying and reimagining what love can be if we open our imaginations to possibility. Jolie helps people create partnerships that are custom built for their authentic selves. No more shrieking, pretending, or hiding required. I am so excited that you're here, Dr. Jolie. How are you doing?
Oh, well, I'm equally excited. I was so happy when I saw that you were on my books today because I know our conversation is going to be luscious.
Excited. We really dig in, right? Okay. Yeah. So let's start by having you tell us a little bit about yourself and your family.
Yeah. So I have a bit of a wild ride in my family. I am married, but I'm also non-monogamous. And I like to tell people that because it's an unusual fact about me, because I look like a soccer mom. I happen to have seven kids. And when you have a family of seven kids, people make assumptions, but those assumptions aren't always founded. My family is made up of seven teenagers from 14 to 21 and a marriage that knocks people's socks off. So usually people don't see those things going hand in hand. And I also happen to have gotten all of my degrees while I was raising this passel of children. So one of the things I'm passionate about talking to people through, like working them through, is you can be as busy as all get out and still have a completely fantastic relationship if you know that it's one of your goals, if you make it a goal, if you make it a priority. It's not an either or situation. And I know because I've been there, done that. I screwed one up, so I did it right the second time.
So good. So good. Okay. So you've done so much research and I can't wait to dive in and talk about all the cool things you've learned about relationships and jealousy. But to start, what step can someone take today to create lasting change in their relationship? If they're listening and they're like, I don't love where we're at, what can they do?
Yeah. You know, that is the most common question I get from people who are feeling stuck. And so when we're feeling stuck, usually there's an inner dialogue going on that is not serving us. The one step you can take is to identify that voice and really pay attention to it. Give yourself 5 minutes to sit with that voice. Listen to what you're hearing. What are you telling yourself? What is that going on? And notice whose voice it is. And sometimes we can really quickly identify that we've got like one of our parents' voices living in our head, or we notice that we've got some teacher or coach living in our head. But sometimes it's an earlier version of ourselves. There's this version of ourselves in there telling us that something can't get better, that this is the way it has to be. We just have to get over it and deal. That's not the truth. And most of us intellectually know that, but that voice is incredibly convincing because it speaks in our voice. It speaks to us and it goes right to our hot buttons. If we identify the voice, we have a chance to turn and actually dialogue with it. So I'm a depth psychologist. So I ask people to have this inner dialogue with themselves, really look inside and say, there's more to me than this one persona I face the world with. Let me talk to those parts. And if I do that, I usually can identify something, a message I'm giving myself that is creating that stuck feeling. If I want to change it, change the dialogue. Have a talk with that voice about who's actually in charge. Get them to trust you. It's not the easiest process in the world, but it does start with quieting the mind and letting yourself actually listen rather than just deciding to stand in that stuckness.
Yes. I love that you brought that up because that really, really was my experience in my marriage. I went into my marriage with a lot of fears because of what I had seen my parents play out, different stories of, you know, how marriages end up. And I didn't want my marriage to end up that way. So I had these lofty goals, but I had also these very big fears. And so I found myself operating out of this fear of ending up
the way I didn't want to end up. And so I was constantly making decisions and, you know, giving myself limitations and things like that based on this huge fear. And it wasn't until I really faced that fear. And it was my mom, who's also a therapist, who sat me down and we went through what's the worst thing that could happen. Mm-hmm. And we faced all those fears. And all of a sudden, it was like I had this freedom to just be who I was, when I realized that I had the power to write whatever story I wanted to. So when I was listening to those voices, I was operating out of fear that my story had to, it was going to turn out one way. And I was creating that story.
Yes.
It was a self-fulfilling prophecy. But when I sat back and I said, no, I can make my story however I want, it was like the shackles came off and my marriage became incredible.
Right. I have a line that I say about that, that I ask people to memorize. It's, your marriage can only be as good as you can imagine it to be. If you are imagining from that fearful place or from an angry place, or you're just lacking imagination, well, that's what you're going to create. And actually, there's an additional piece. Your marriage can also only be as good as your therapist, counselor, or coach can imagine it to be. If you're feeling limited right now, look at the messages you're receiving. Are they actually supporting, like what you're saying, Monica? Like, it could be anything if you can free yourself to imagine into it.
And I'm so excited to dive into this too, because jealousy played a huge role in what I was creating. Like, I was so fearful and I had so much jealousy that I was just creating this negative feedback loop for myself that was just horrible.
Jealousy's main trick.
Yes. Okay. So we're going to keep diving in here, but tell us two things we absolutely must get clear on to have like a passionate partnership, one where we can just freely share our love with each other.
Yeah. Okay. It's actually really, really simple. And there are things that most people are aware of and they apply in their career or even in their avocation, something they feel passionate about, but they forget to apply it in their relationship. The first is totally a you thing. Like, so turn to yourself, ask, why am I in this relationship at all? What's your why? Just like Simon Sinek says about business, we need to know why we are here. Why did you show up? Because if you know your why, then in those rough moments, okay, but you have something to return to. The second is your purpose. And this is a together thing. This is a conversation that you have with your partner that helps you found your relationship on something that's bigger than either of you individually. What is your purpose together? A lot of people will think of this as a mission or a vision, whatever word works for you. I use why and purpose. The reason I chose purpose is because it may change over time. While you're in your early career stages, your purpose may be to support each other in gaining the certifications and credentialing and all of that that you want. Later, your purpose for being together may be to raise a family, to do it in a particular way. Perhaps your purpose becomes achieving millionaire status. Perhaps your purpose becomes supporting each other in doing something really amazing. Perhaps your purpose is entirely about how you feel every day. I want to wake up and feel loved and seen and known. It could be anything, but if you know the purpose, then again, when you hit that rough patch, you come back, you circle back to that purpose. And now you're like, okay, I know why I'm here. And together we know what our purpose is. Cool. We can build.
Yeah, this is so good, because not only when you hit rough patches, but also when there's conflict resolution or big decisions to be made, like where do we raise our family or things like that, you can come back to this purpose that you have. And it's easier to, when you're disagreeing about something, or, you know, there's a big decision and you both fall on different sides of a line, you can go, what is our purpose and which one supports that purpose?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Decision-making, especially when you're growing at slightly different rates, which happens a lot, one of you has a wonderful opportunity and maybe feeling like this is it, we're here. And the other could be feeling like, yeah, we were already doing something. The purpose statement can be your ground, and it can also be the place where you come back to renegotiate. So instead of negotiating about a single decision, negotiate your purpose, come back to like the really essential parts of your marriage. Because if what you're finding out, for instance, is like, turns out I don't want to have children. Okay. This is deep rooted stuff. We don't want to be making like superficial decisions when we need to have the deeper conversation. And so just having the purpose on your radar allows you to come back to these really foundational pieces that are going to carry you through your life. They're going to make or break your success in your relationship.
Oh gosh, this is so good. Okay, I love this. So I want to talk a little bit about sexual intimacy, because I know this is like a big topic for you. And we're going to get into the jealousy piece and all of that. But what is one single conversation that can kind of reignite that spark, that passion that we have for each other in the bedroom?
Yeah, I love this question so much because I use this question on myself all the time. It is a very simple question. The question is, what is sex? What is sex? We can ask that question of ourselves, but even better, we sit with our partner during a time when we're not trying to actually engage in intimacy. We're having coffee on the porch, everything's relaxed. What the heck is sex anyways? How do you know when you're having it? How do you know when it starts? How do you know when it's over? What's the goal of it? What is sex? So I teach relationship therapists and counselors and educators. I teach sex educators. I have sat in rooms full of hundreds of people and asked this question, what is sex? And I'll have them all write it down on a card. No two definitions will be the same. There is no single definition. The reason I say that this is a great igniter, it literally is. First off, all of a sudden you're talking about sexy stuff. You're talking about what you think is sexy. So now you're in a conversation that gets you into your shared vocabulary about what is sexy, what feels good to us. But also you can clarify some profound misunderstandings that have been happening. I had a couple I was working with once. They literally disagreed about whether they were having sex at all. And it was wrecking their marriage. Like they were in the hole because he felt like he hadn't had sex in years. And I got this side of the story from him. He's like, I haven't had sex in 3 years. I'm like, okay, let's work on that. The side of the story I got from her was, he's crazy. Yes, we have. The problem was they had no shared vocabulary around sex. And when we finally were able to tease this apart, we found out that he wasn't counting anything that wasn't penetrative and wasn't orgasm based. She was counting lots of things that were pleasure oriented and they were less penetrative because she was having trouble with wanting to be penetrated, but they were definitely things she felt were sexual. They were getting her off. They were exciting to her. Getting them on the same page meant that they had a sex life again. And that changed everything. Not having that conversation, there was definitely a divorce in the offing. There definitely was, because a sexless marriage that isn't explicitly agreed to, it's not generally going to end well. Any kind of sex life you want is possible if you can begin the conversations to negotiate it. Yeah. So what is sex?
Yeah. I think that's so important. Okay. Let's keep going. How do we talk about what we really want in the bedroom? Because we're having this conversation and like, what actually, how do we know that? And then how do we convey that to our partner?
Yeah, this is great because I think a lot of people imagine that sex is separate from the rest of their life, from the rest of their conversations. And while that is a way you can get by in life, I encourage people to start shifting their mindset around what it means to talk about sex, to talk about desire, to talk about wanting things. If we can start getting in touch with what feels pleasurable, and take all the baggage we've got about whether it's sex or not, take that off and simply start to follow talking about pleasure with our partner, that opens up the door to a much broader spectrum of behaviors and words that we might have. If you're feeling shame, just bringing up the subject of sex, or it's just not something you've ever talked about, like maybe you have even a sex life you're okay with, but you can't talk about it. Let me just say that there is a whole other layer available to you. When you're ready to rip that Band-Aid off and put words to desire, there is another layer of intimacy, of being known, of being understood, available. And on top of that, often we find out that our partner wants things, or we want things, and we can communicate it. We can get more of what we want, and we can get on the same page and also do less of the things that neither one of us wants, but we just think are like in the script. So it really is a courageous act for many of us to start talking about sex. So I do think about it a little bit like tearing off a Band-Aid. The first time is going to be a little jarring, but set yourself up for success. Imagine that this is going to go well. have the conversation in the most comfortable place for you. So in a place where you're relaxed and you feel like you're not going to be interrupted by other conversation or small feet running around the house, right? And simply open the door to, you know, there's stuff that I have always wanted to talk about, but it feels really kind of sketchy to me. And I don't know why, because I trust you and I love you. So I want to take this chance. It's an adventure. And I've watched it change people's entire lives, because opening the door to talking about intimacy allows you to now talk about anything. Usually this is the most frightening door to open. So once you get through this one, like politics, religion, money, that all can follow. And it's a fun one to talk about once you've gotten over that for initial jump.
Yeah. I want to just take this opportunity really quickly to mention that in just a couple of weeks, we're going to have the Intimacy Secrets Summit, where Dr. Jolie will be a presenter, as well as tons of other experts in this area that are going to kind of talk about what it means to open the door to intimacy, to really know each other and be known by another person. And what gets me really, really excited about this is what you're saying is basically you have the key to make your marriage incredible. You have the key to unlock happiness for a lifetime together. But it is really scary. But imagine if you were always hiding that key from your partner. Like if you were hiding this key to unlock unlimited happiness and pleasure and fulfillment and all of the things that, you know, happily ever after are made of, like you're sitting on it and you're hiding it from the person who can actually make those dreams come true. Right. And so it gets me really excited to start talking about intimacy, because, you know, there are so many negative messages that we get from the world and from Hollywood and our parents growing up, who are very well intentioned, I'm sure. But, you know, we kind of have shame and we've put a lock on this idea of really being known by each other. And I can personally attest to it, but also I've seen it in the couples that I've worked with. When you finally like pull out that key and start sharing it with each other, it's like incredible. So definitely, definitely join us for the Intimacy Secrets Summit. But let's keep talking. Okay. So let's talk about women for a second, because, you know, we're kind of a different beast here. And as women, how can we feel really confident in ourselves exactly the way we are, especially when it comes to being sexually intimate with a spouse?
Yeah. Okay. I have a really profound tip to offer. It changed my entire life. I want you to open up your Instagram and I want you to start curating a feed that has bodies that don't all look the same. Mm-hmm. People who talk about bodies in different ways, people whose skins are different tones and hair is different textures, and mix the images in your world up. As a depth psychologist, I know that image is the first way that our brain starts patterning. And when we live in a world that has a definition of what is acceptable and what's wantable, worse, what's wantable, when our definition is so narrow that no one could fit through it, no one could squeeze through it, we are already writing the script for what our partner is going to supposedly show us. It's us. We can actually change this. Yes, our partners are going to have their own leanings and inklings and wants. But if we want ourselves, everything changes. Everything shifts. I had to start recurating my world so that I was intentionally surrounding myself with a diversity of everything, beauty and opinions and all of that. And that let me totally love the weird, bizarre self that I am. Like, love it. I love my weirdness. I love it. And I couldn't do that when I was always trying to fit into somebody else's shell. It's so actionable.
So good. You know, what's really cool is right now, as we're recording this, we're in the middle of the Olympics. And I will tell you, one of the most significant things, I think, like moments in my life, was my husband and I were traveling through Europe and we went to the Olympic Museum in Switzerland. I think I'm going to say it wrong. It's like in Lausanne, Switzerland or something. And on the wall, one of the exhibits was on the wall, and it was silhouettes of bodies of the different athletes that compete in the Olympics. And it like blew my mind to see the incredible diversity of what these bodies looked like. They were short, they were tall, they were thin, they were
wider and more burlesque and like,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Like right? All these different bodies that were the most incredible athletes in the world represented on this wall. And I went, oh my gosh, there's not one mold for beauty and athleticism and, you know, strength and all of these things. Like it comes in all different shapes and sizes. And that's not only our physical appearance, but also our mentality and our thoughts and our, you know, what makes us who we are. There is not one mold. And so as soon as you can broaden your horizon, so I love that advice. I love the curate your feed to this idea that there are so many different shapes and sizes of beauty and strength.
Yeah. So frequently I hear from men how they love all kinds of bodies and they are not concerned with all sorts of things that we concern ourselves with. So when we give ourselves permission to be in our body, oof, that is easy to find sexy.
And that just, is so sexy.
Yeah.
That is so sexy. That
confidence. Own your roles. Own your roles. Like that's how I'll put it, the simplest way. Own your roles and your and everything about you. And if you could see yourself through your partner's eyes, everything would change. And you turn that same gaze on them. Sometimes as an exercise, I do exactly that. I try to imagine myself looking at myself through my partner's eyes, like with the same way I look at him. I find him so like compelling. And it's not because of any one particular thing. It's his weird self.
Yeah, I'm so attracted to my husband's calves. I don't know. It's so strange, right? But like you realize like it's all, yeah. I love it. It's all good. It's all good.
A good elbow, whatever, anything.
So let's talk about your, because this, I think goes with this. I think when we allow ourselves to go there in thinking that our spouses are looking for something different, it's jealousy, right? Let's talk about your findings on jealousy and its effect on our, not only our sexual relationship, but our emotional and, you know, our connection with our partners.
Yeah. Okay. I study jealousy because I am so passionate about how it impacts our lives. Many people feel like they've got jealousy under control, but what I found in my research is that jealousy exists. It has its own reasons for being. It's part of our existence for a reason. So I just want to first say jealousy, this fear that our love bond will be interrupted by a third party, that is a very natural state of being. It's found in infants as early as 6 months old. It's designed to be create that protective bond between caregiver and infant to reinforce it, right? We don't want interruption of the love bond because we would literally die if that love bond were interrupted. However, we grow up and it is not true that we will literally die if our love bond is interrupted, but it can sure feel that way. And so jealousy is this anticipatory fear, which is so much even worse than real fear, because we can anticipate something that isn't even necessarily logistically possible. Anticipatory fear of a, and this is super important, real or imagined interruption to that love bond. And it is the imagined one that more often than not is harming people's ability to actually just sink deeply into trust with their partner. Imagining that our partner is looking elsewhere, imagining that there are threats all around us. It also interferes our relationships with other women. Like if we're talking about cisgendered heterosexual people, it is one of the things that keeps us from fully trusting each other if we see each other as threats. Okay, so we take a breath with that. Jealousy is big and it has a purpose. One of the things that I found early on in my work with jealousy was that when people try to kill it or cure it or crush it or like just excise it from their life completely, it comes back. It's definitely a hydra. It will come back and it will come back in ways that we did not expect. It's like trying to hold a beach ball underwater. Things coming back up and you're not going to know exactly where. So instead, I encourage people to start thinking about where jealousy shows up for them, because it's normal and natural. And what do they want to do when it does? What's your go-to move going to be? Because most people's go-to move is to point their finger out, to look at their partner and say, I need you to stop doing X, Y, and Z. I need you to never do this. I need you to do this. It's all outward. They have no control. So now they've actually handed someone else the key to hurt them if they so choose. Hopefully the relationship isn't working that way, but, and they haven't taken responsibility for the fact that the jealousy is their feeling. So if jealousy is my feeling and I tell someone else they have to control their behavior, now I've begun something that could actually stay a trend through the rest of our relationship. This control cycle that is unhealthy and just bottom line doesn't feel good. It just doesn't feel good. Jealousy's heavy, but if we try to cure it, that's the cycle we're going to invite ourselves into. So I instead invite people to learn to dance with their jealousy. It's normal and it's natural. And in fact, it can even be erotically charged. You can get a lot of sexual energy going off of jealousy, but it's like playing with fire. We need to do it in safe ways. When I teach people these ways, I'm like, okay, so this is baby steps. First, we have to get to know jealousy. We have to be able to navigate our actual needs. We need to be able to figure out how to express those needs. And then we can get to the part where we actually play at the edges of jealousy to see where it's fun for us and where we need boundaries.
So good.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. I mean, I wrote a literal dissertation on it, so I could go on forever, but it's also an area where nobody really points a lot of their attention. We try to hide from it and say, oh, I'm not jealous. One way to find out if jealousy is bothering you is, do you find yourself saying, oh, I'm just jealous, or, oh, she's just jealous. The word just, there's your indicator. You're trying to minimize it and act as though jealousy isn't this incredibly powerful archetypal force, right? That is now present in your life. The word just is the first thing that makes my ears go, okay, let's go into that and really start to work with what is it telling us about the relationship and how, because behind that is how the relationship could actually be exponentially better.
Yeah. I like how you pointed out that when we're trying to control our partner's actions to manage our own anxiety, like we can only get into trouble with that. Like, don't talk to other women at the gym. Don't do, like, when we're saying to our partners, you have to behave in this way so that I can manage my own anxiety. Like, that's definitely a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. You're setting yourself up for something. You're setting yourself up for something you can habitually fixate on. So now you may find yourself checking his feeds, checking his socials, checking his texts, you know, like violating privacy boundaries that you wouldn't otherwise do. And you're setting yourself up to imagine that you aren't enough as you are. Mm-hmm. Like, you're caught in this cycle of, like, as if anyone he talks to is somehow a threat to you.
Yeah.
That is not a yummy place to hang out for very long.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. I remember in the beginning, when I was beginning to get better at this whole concept of jealousy and how it kind of plays a role in my life, I just thought, he chose me, right? He chose me and he'll do it again, right? Like, I mean, you're never going to remove all of the triggers. They're never all going to be removed. But if you can just remember, like, I am enough.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You're never going to remove all the triggers. It's not actually that they're threats. They're triggers that send you, they set off. It's like a teenager pulling a fire alarm when there's no fire. Like, how long do you want to stand in the cold outside waiting for that fire truck to show up and like check the whole building?
Right.
It's how, if you keep pulling the fire alarm and saying, everything's a threat, you spend a lot of time disconnected from your partner rather than actively connecting. And it's very challenging to your partner if you say, I trust you, and then you act as though jealousy is completely reasonable. Those two things don't really sit next to each other on an unconscious level. That dissonance is just going to throw you off all the time. And yet every song, every love song, every rom-com, every everything tries to teach us that jealousy is a sign of love. The jealousy, and there's a way in which it's true. Jealousy is a great indicator of something we care about. So if you're jealous about something, stop and ask yourself, oh yeah, that means I care about this person. Awesome. Great. But The great Dr. Maya Angelou has this wonderful phrase. She says, jealousy is like salt in food. A little can enhance the savor, but too much spoils the dish. That's it. And that line is usually way closer to a little teeny pinch than our media would tell us, right? So it's normal to be thinking that jealousy is a good sign that you're into somebody, but it's not helpful. So we got to unpack it.
Yeah. So give us one practical application. Where do we start? If we realize I do kind of respond out of jealousy in a lot of ways. Give us one or two practical things where we can just start to notice it and change that dialogue.
Yeah. So it is about the naming, the noticing so that we can name it. So the very first thing I ask people to do is start scanning themselves, body scan, pay attention to what is happening when you're feeling anxious. A lot of people will deny that they feel jealous, but they feel anxious about their partner. We've gotten comfortable with the word anxious. Jealousy is a kind of anxiety. Jealousy is a complex emotion made of fear, right? So it's tied in. So if you find yourself saying, I'm anxious. I want you to do a body scan and see where is that anxiousness showing up? And is some part of that jealousy? Just slowly checking, is that jealousy? What's going on for me? Am I worried? And if the word jealousy is setting you off, am I worried that my partner is going to turn away from me? Am I worried that they're going to want me less? There's the first little tinge of, there might be jealousy going on. If jealousy's already announced itself and you're like, oh yeah, I know I'm jealous. I know I am. And this is very common. Then notice whether you feel okay naming your jealousy or whether you feel shame. So if you feel shame, I have a client who was recently working on her jealousy and the jealousy was manifesting itself in habitually checking his Instagram and Facebook feeds just constantly. And it was interrupting her life. So she didn't want this anymore. And she had no reason to believe that there was any practical threat. The thing that she needed to do was come to understand that the jealousy is trying to save her from pain. Mm. So she needed to accept it in, tell it, thank you. Thanks. I see you trying to warn me, and then create strategies for herself to stop the habitual behavior. And that's stopping any habitual behavior. There are a lot of ways to do that because she's fueling the jealousy, thinking that that's what's keeping her safe. So many of us are trying to keep ourselves safe in ways that are not practically helpful in our lives.
Ooh, that's a good little soundbite. I really like that. Well, Dr. Jolie, this has been freaking amazing. I have loved our conversation and I hope that we get to have lots more. But for those who are listening and they're like, yeah, this is good, we have so much more in the Intimacy Summit. So keep your eyes peeled for the opportunity to sign up for that free event, which is featuring 30 experts just like Dr. Jolie who talk about all the different types of intimacy and the secrets to unlock that in our own relationships. And Dr. Jolie, tell the viewers where they can find you and learn more about your jealousy research and all the ways you can help couples.
Absolutely. So people can find me at my website. It's joliehamilton.com, J-O-L-I, Hamilton, just like the musical, nice and easy. And if you're there and want to pop on and grab my curiosity date, it's right there on the front page. And I would love for more people to go on amazing dates that are not just the same old boring things that we talk about. It's free. And I would just love to have that in the hands of more people. And you can also find all my socials there on the website.
Perfect. Thank you so, so, so much.
Thanks for having me, Monica.
Okay. I absolutely love my chats with Dr. Jolie Hamilton. We covered a lot of ground in that interview, and I feel like she gave some really tangible and actionable takeaways that you can go right now and increase the intimacy and connection in your relationship, as well as examine the role that you're allowing jealousy to play in your relationship. And do you want to make any tweaks to that in order to remove jealousy as a block to deepening your intimacy and strengthening your connection? And with that, I'm going to highly encourage you to sign up for the Intimacy Secrets Summit, where you are going to get so much more information about things that you might unknowingly be doing to block the flow of intimacy in your relationship, as well as hundreds, literally hundreds of things that you can do to increase your intimacy and connection. Like I said, Dr. Jolie is one of the 34 intimacy experts that are participating in this free virtual event. If you're listening in real time, it starts today. So you're not too late. You're just going to go to www.onthebrightersideofmarriage.com/intimacysecrets to get your free ticket. And then you're going to want to block off some time to listen to these incredible interviews that unlock the secrets to creating lifelong, untethered intimacy in your marriage. So go and do that right now. And until next week, happy marriaging. If you had as much fun as we did just now, please be sure to go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and review, which helps others to find the show. You can also share your favorite episodes on social media. And if you want more, head over to onthebrightersideofmarriage.com and download a copy of my 5 things I do every day to keep my marriage sizzling hot. And until next time, have courage, be kind, and stay on the brighter side.